The group is called American Renaissance, and their website is amren.com. And some interesting things have been going on. One of the listeners sent me some information, asked me to line up this guest, and I'm very pleased to bring on a gentleman who is with this group, Jared Taylor, who is now joining us on the hotline. And Mr. Taylor, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir. Thank you for joining us. First of all, tell us about your organization.
American Renaissance is a monthly publication that has been published for 20 years now, and it writes about relatively controversial questions having to do with race and immigration. And we take the view that diversity of the kind that we are supposed to be celebrating, a diversity of race and language and religion and all the rest, is really a source of tension rather than a source of strength. And so we do take some controversial positions.
So, like the last caller brought up the whole issue of interracial marriage and was raising questions about it, I guess he would agree with that, or?
Well, I think that's up to each individual person. But
right.
if a black person wishes his child to marry another black person, or, you know, many Jews are very concerned that their children stay within the faith, I think that's entirely fine. I think that there should not be pressure on people to marry outside of their group if that's not what they prefer.
But people should be allowed to marry whoever they want, right?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course. But I think that it's a natural preference that, by and large, people prefer the company of folks who are like themselves. That's why the country continues to be substantially segregated in private lives.
What do you make, Mr. Taylor, of the increasing what do you make of the increasing numbers of interracial couples, though?
I think it's entirely up to them.
Okay.
I think that there's no question that interracial marriages, they break up more frequently than marriages between people of the same race. Furthermore, this is a rather shocking statistic. There is 8 times the likelihood of spousal homicide in mixed-race marriages than in marriages between couples of the same race. Now, obviously, in all marriages, the rates are quite low, but the rates of spousal homicide are 8 times higher if it's a mixed-race marriage.
Now, we've been hearing a lot of talk about post-racial America, Barack Obama, African-American half African-American, half white president being elected mostly by white voters. Here in New Orleans, we have a white mayor that's just been elected by a majority African-American population. And people are speculating that this is sort of a post-racial political era. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that. I think that, I know that there were many people in New Orleans, perhaps they're not the majority of blacks, who were very disappointed that I believe, what was the name of the fellow who pulled out at the last minute, that you had a state...
Ed Murray. Legislator? Ed Murray.
Yes, Ed Murray. And many blacks were considered this a great betrayal because he was the one who had the best chance of winning. They wanted a black man in that office. They were not the least bit shy about saying so.
But there were black folks who were running. There were several black candidates running, and the majority of black voters, I think 62%, voted for a white guy, Mitch Landrieu.
Yep, and it's news because it doesn't happen a whole lot often. Don't forget, 95% of black voters voted for Barack Obama, including blacks who would describe themselves as conservatives. So racial loyalty triumphed over ideology in those cases. Now, I don't fault Barack Obama for the job that he's doing. I think that we have a very, very different president than we might have had if we'd had Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson in the White House. Those guys would, I think, unquestionably try to run the country for the benefit of blacks. I don't think Barack Obama is doing that. But there's no question that there is still racial solidarity, mostly among non-white groups. There are racial divisions, there's racial conflict, and just because we have a half-white, half-black man in the White House, none of that stuff is going to go away.
Go ahead, sir.
When he was at the time of his inauguration, people were acting as if, Gandhi had been elected, or that this was the second coming, and this was going to be transformational, and America was going to be changed. I predicted at the time, no, daily life of people is not going to change.
So no differences as far as race relations from the time Barack Obama started as president from the time before?
I beg your pardon?
I said
there's been a change in race relations?
Yeah, there's been no improvement since Obama was elected.
Yeah, so I would say that, well, we may not know for a while, but the question will be, are there fewer black and Hispanic riots in Los Angeles schools? Are white people more likely to live in black neighborhoods? Are there fewer race discrimination claims filed with the EEOC? I mean, those are the ways that you can have an objective sense of whether or not there's been an improvement in race relations. And my prediction is that on all that kind of, by that kind of index, the arrival of Barack Obama in the White House will be found to have had no effect. Now, let me remind you that several years ago, Douglas Wilder was elected the first black governor of the state of Virginia.
Right.
And there were similar predictions at that time. This is a new era. It's going to be kumbaya. Well, in terms of the daily lives of Virginians, there was really no perceptible change.
Visiting with Jared Taylor, the magazine is American Renaissance. Our talk line, 661-2929 on the North Shore, 556-9696 on the South Shore. Email address, jeff@wgso.com. Mr. Taylor, you had a convention that was planned, and you've had problems. Tell us what happened.
Well, that's correct. We tend to take Eric Holder seriously when he says that America is a nation of cowards when it comes to talking about race. Well, we don't want to be cowards. We want to speak honestly, and we think that opinions of the kind that I've just been expressing, the fact that most people generally prefer to hang out with people like themselves, that's the sort of thing that has to be talked about. I don't think that's what Eric Holder wants to hear, but in any case, we had lined up, I think, an excellent group of speakers who are going to explore some of these questions. But there are people who think that this kind of thing should not be discussed. And when people found out where we were holding our hotel, the hotels where we were planning on holding our conference, they were deluged with phone calls. Some hotels even got death threats saying, if you hold this conference, we will walk into your hotel and shoot you. We got, we had our contracts canceled by no fewer than four hotels because there was so much pressure put on them that they were prepared to walk away from very profitable business in order not to have these conferences. And I think that's absolutely an outrage.
So who was applying the pressure?
Yes, yes.
What groups were applying the pressure?
There was a group, One People's Project is one. Another is something called the Self-Described Anarchist Collective. These are mostly internet groups, but what they would do is they would put up these big messages saying, these horrible folks, and they would describe us, of course, in the most lurid, provocative, incorrect terms. They would say, these horrible people are going to hold a meeting at this hotel. Why don't you call them up? Call them up time after again and tell them that you are never going to patronize them, that they're doing a terrible thing by hosting these awful people. And, you know, if you can get enough people to make phone calls and if you get enough people crazy enough to make actual death threats, then, frankly, it's hard to blame a hotel.
So it was totally scrubbed, all of your events?
Our conference was completely wiped out on account of this.
Wow.
And you know,
hang on if you can, sir. We're up against the clock. I take a quick timeout. Jared Taylor joining us, his publication, American Renaissance. And we'll talk about the controversy that erupted as they tried to have a convention. All right, we're back. Jeff Currier here, cruising through a segment with a special guest, Mr. Jared Taylor of American Renaissance. Folks, at 11:30, we're going to be doing our weekly live chat at abc26.com. Our friend Chad Rogers will be with us. He's the publisher of TheDeadPelican.com. We'll be talking about Nagin's legacy. He says that we're overlooking his accomplishments. Do you agree with that or not? Also looking at Bobby Jindal with his book coming out. Is he preparing to run for president? Just two of the topics we'll be getting into in our live chat. Check us out at abc26.com at 11:30. Hope you join us online. Right now, we're back to Jared Taylor of American Renaissance. And, Mr. Taylor, let's take a few phone calls. 661-2929 on the North Shore, 556-9696 on the South Shore. It's your ticket into the program. Richie is with us in Metairie. Hey, Richie.
Hey, good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Taylor. And even those Bolshevik fascists up in Washington want to stifle liberty and free speech, we welcome you to speak your mind over the free airwaves of WGSO. My question is, since the current social standard discourages and even policy-wise absolutely prohibits white awareness or anything even described as white solidarity, Mr. Jared Taylor, how would you convince the decent white folk who cheerfully promote and embrace multicultural diversity, a racial biased immigration policy tilted against their own interests, why an American Renaissance convention and a racial awareness of their own is important to their survival?
Well, gosh, that's a big question. I think I would just point out that when it comes to the notion of celebrating diversity, when you ask whites to celebrate racial diversity, you're asking them to celebrate their dwindling numbers and influence. I mean, after all, if a majority white country, which used to be about 90% white, is supposed to be celebrating increasing numbers of blacks, Asians, Mexicans, Hispanics, etc., that can only come about by reducing the number of, and influence of whites. I don't see why we should be celebrating our decline. And if you put the shoe on the other foot, if you imagined hundreds of thousands of whites pouring across the border into Mexico, and they were celebrating 4th of July rather than Cinco de Mayo, and insisting on instruction in English rather than Spanish in school, wanting ballot papers in English, and some of them muttering darkly about breaking off a chunk of northern Mexico and making an all-white republic, the way some Mexican activists do in the United States, I don't think you could trick the Mexicans into saying that that was cultural enrichment. They would think it was an invasion, and they wouldn't put up with it.
One of your targets is this whole concept of multiculturalism?
Yes, very much so. I think that a country should have some kind of coherent national core. And if you start adding in new languages, press one for English, you're just storing up but one problem after another.
Let me tell you what I encounter a lot, Mr. Taylor, and that is people who have come to this country from repressed regimes like Cuba, like Eastern Europe, like Venezuela, and cherish America, love our institutions, our culture, and have studied hard to learn English and become productive citizens, patriotic citizens. I run into folks like that all the time. Just the other night, a Cuban-American who was lecturing a group about this health care bill and about what happened in Cuba and how we can't go down that road. And I think they add a lot of value to the discussion. I really do.
The Pew Hispanic Center has found that of all Hispanics living in the United States, that includes citizens and non-citizens, only one quarter of them consider themselves first and foremost Americans. And the rest of them, the three quarters that remain, consider themselves first and foremost either Mexican or Puerto Rican or whatever their original nationality was, or Hispanic. I think that's a very, very unhealthy state of mind. Now, certainly, there are groups who've come from all kinds of different parts of the world who have become well-assimilated and patriotic Americans. And God bless them. But human nature is such that once a certain group that is alien in some manner compared to the dominant cultural core of a nation, once those numbers reach a certain critical mass, then it becomes very easy for the individuals in that group to maintain that smaller loyalty rather than wholeheartedly assimilating into the larger group. And those differences become much, much more difficult if there is some kind of racial difference between the majority and these smaller groups.
Are you predicting some sort of breakup of this country down the road? Do you think we're heading towards some sort of separate nation here in the southwest part of the country or some other sector of the continent?
That's very hard to say, but I think that before, say, 1970, when we had a very small number of Hispanics, we could have said with confidence that that is absolutely out of the question. But now, when we have the state of Arizona or Texas, where you could end up with a majority Hispanic population, I think it becomes an issue that we have to consider. And it is a problem, a potential problem, that was completely avoidable. And I think that we are dicing with our future. We're dicing with the kind of country we're going to leave to our children and grandchildren.
Do you think
we set in motion demographic trends of that kind?
Do you think one solution would be to secure the borders, to crack down on illegal immigration, to try to prevent the flow of millions of illegals into this country?
Certainly. And I think, frankly, the United States doesn't need a single additional immigrant. There are 300 million people in the country. When's the last time you were driving down the highway and you said to yourself, gosh, I wish there were more cars on the road? Or you're driving through the countryside and you said, gosh, those are ugly fields and forests and trees. I think we need more strip malls.
Do you think they'll be the political will to really tackle the immigration problem? Because I haven't seen it.
Well, I think that, you see, this is one of those areas in which there is a tremendous difference between popular opinion in the United States and published or elite opinion. Congressmen, newspaper editorial writers, the talking heads on television, they all think, oh, you know, this diversity is great and we're a nation of immigrants, blah, blah, blah. Ordinary Americans are opposed to large-scale immigration by 70-75% margins, but their voices are not heard. But I will tell you this. If Barack Obama and his pals really want to try to put through an amnesty, like they did, George Bush II did with the help of John McCain, they will be flooded with angry phone calls, demonstrations. The American people are absolutely fed up with the idea.
Well, that's why it was dropped by Bush, right? I mean, because of the public outrage.
That's right. Mm. Absolute public outrage. And I think, you know, we're supposed to be living in a democracy in which the people's will is put into place.
Well, I'm waiting for them to follow our will as far as health care. I mean, that's another area. They're not following the will of the people. But certainly, clamping down on immigration, people are saying loudly and clearly they want that done. Interesting discussion. Thank you, Jared Taylor, joining us of the publication American Renaissance and updating us on what has been some problems that his group has been encountering.